this new media type is actually a superset of all the other media types. If you look around your room, you've got screens, you've got audio, video, everything within that 3D environment. We're at the beginning of 3D as a media type becoming as pervasive as these other medias that we're so used to using. We're at the very tiniest foothills of this amazing journey of what and how we're going to communicate in the future. And anyone who's involved in 3D at this point is at the beginning of one of the biggest changes in human communication and recording that we will ever see.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to Digital to Learn. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Greetings.
We're going to have fun again today because last week we had a chance to talk with Danny Stefanik, and he's back for part two. If you didn't get a chance to listen to part one, you can catch that episode on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and also visit our website, www.digitaltolearn.com with a numerical 2, to have access to all the resources that Danny provided us with. But for now, part two with Danny Stefanik. Welcome, Danny.
Thanks for having me back.
When we had an opportunity to meet with you in a virtual space, I'll be honest, I didn't know what to expect. And so I logged on 5 to 10 minutes early and was prompted to create an avatar. And I was almost late to the meeting because I was being so particular about what my avatar was going to look like. So that was a dangerous lead into the meeting. I'm like, I can't be late. Here I am still trying to figure out what color my hair is going to be before I enter this meeting space. So it was fun, but yeah, tempting to say the least. So there's another platform.
Can I just stop you there for a minute, Tiffany?
Yeah.
I heard a rumor, this just a rumor, that one of our colleagues was in that
meeting. Oh, no.
And there's a button called Kick. Could you tell us about that?
Well, yeah, this is interesting because some of the rooms that people are allowed into, they're given, you know, special rights or permissions, especially if we want to get people into a room where they can be able to organize, add items, decorate, and also be event organizers, facilitate what people can do. And you can, if you know your way around, you can get to look at the actions you can perform on other users as an organizer. And one of them, it's a big red button that says kick, right? And what it actually does is kick somebody out of the room. And this is great for moderators. But sometimes when we do demos and give people permission, occasionally, you know, I'll be kicked out or somebody else will be kicked out. And, it's interesting because you wonder, with the person who's pressing the button, they've got two thoughts. Either this kicks somebody out of the room, well, my avatar is going to go and kick the other avatar. Either way, you should be conscious that it's a big red button that's going to kick someone. Mm-hmm. And either way, I don't know, that person's got a little bit of, evil genius in them. You know, they've got a little bit of a quirky smile when they do it. When they should I press this button or shouldn't I? Okay, I'm going to do it. So it's a bit of fun, but it's not accessible in most events. It's only for event organizers.
Okay, well, one of our colleagues left the room momentarily during that meeting we had with you, and now you know why. but we won't tell on the culprit. So.
Yep. Let's keep the name quiet.
There is a second platform that you run. Well, I guess there's more than two, huh? There's a second one that we want to talk about, LearnBright. Can you talk more about that company and what it can offer the education sector?
Yeah, sure. In fact, the Mootup events platform came out of the LearnBright development. It runs in browsers. But LearnBright's a lot more comprehensive in that it's an authoring tool for creating not only spaces you can get together and do learning with, but it can also track everything that people do as a gamified experience. So you can do actions in the environment and get triggered with rewards, whether that's points or unlocking a door like an escape room. And it also allows you to create AI chatbots that can be quite elaborate. And this allows you to jump into an experience Imagine if you're going into a school learning management system and you might have been assigned some courses to do. Traditionally, they're slideshows or videos that you need to watch, and then that's recorded in your school's learning management system, and your completion of those courses is tracked. Well, this is the same, but for 3D experiences. So you can jump in, start going through communication interactions with virtual characters. It's used often in healthcare for decision and process understanding. It's used for social work, for understanding how to deal with elderly patients in their own homes, all the ways you should communicate with people. And based on your interactions with characters and the environment, all of that's tracked and scored. And so it's like running through games, but for training. And each time you play it, it can go a different direction. And you can learn each time you replay the game. So that's what LearnBrite's about. It's about creating those 3D experiences. And instead of it being what I call lean back learning, where you just sit back and watch a slideshow and click next, 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 or watch a video, and then maybe answer a multiple choice question at the end and try and choose the least incorrect answer. Instead, you're going into a 3D experience, you're interacting, you have a user-centered experience. That is what I call a lean forward learning experience. You're making decisions that change the outcome, and that leads to retention and better training outcomes. And when you add virtual reality on top of that, you get even greater engagement and retention because you're excluding all other things that could distract you. Mm-hmm. But the platform itself runs on everything from mobile to tablets, Chromebooks, laptops, and also in VR headsets.
Now, do you work with instructors to create those different experiences, or is there already a bank of experiences that LearnBrite has available?
Generally, they're bespoke solutions. We do have a few off the shelf, but it's more like an authoring suite, like Adobe Suite, but for creating immersive experiences, combined with something like Zoom for the conferencing side. So, it's really a immersive VR experiential platform for training and also for conferencing. But really people get in there, they build their own experiences. Anyone can do it. If you've got the skills to put together, let's say, a PowerPoint presentation, you can actually jump in and start creating. You don't need any programming skills at all. And because we have so many assets in the platform from our virtual worlds, you were mentioning the avatars before, we actually have over 1 billion style combinations. And I guess you're pretty thankful they weren't at the front end of your demo, because they never have got in.
That's so funny.
Full diversity and inclusion, which is tremendously helpful in these days as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a fun authoring tool, and it's available as a free trial. So if anyone wants to jump in and try it out, they can.
Oh, wow.
There's a 30-day trial. You can build an experience and jump into it and share it with colleagues and find out how that goes. But it's really about higher engaging training that creates real skill transfer in attendees and learners. And that's all about putting the user at the center of the experience. Very simple concept, but not too many learning organizations are focused on that.
So just from this conversation, it's obvious that you are someone who consistently is thinking about the future, what might be. So without sharing any copyright or brilliant ideas that we could copy, what are some things that you're pondering about what the future of technology might look like?
Oh, that's easy. My interest in virtual reality goes way back, but it's based on another premise, which is we're almost at the cusp of a real transition in human communication. And I explain it as media types. So prior to the internet, we already had records and music and photos and books, text, images, video, audio, were all media types we were using. And the internet came along, we digitized all of them, added value on top of them. But there's another media type, which is 3D. And 3D is a young media type. It's only really been around since we've had computers to capture and display that type of content. Before that, maybe sculptures, architecture, you could consider that as 3D content. And some interesting things like memory theaters and stuff like that. If you look that up, it's a very interesting topic. But 3D as a media type is young. And just as I mentioned earlier, video being in transition from something that was hard to access to being pervasive, 3D is at that point now. And what that means is all the types of ways we can use 3D for communication. And it's not just virtual reality or augmented reality. It's 3D itself. So this allows us to have it, you know, whether it's in AR, whether it's in VR or just on a flat screen. And the way that we capture it from the real world, we share it with others. This new media type is actually a superset of all the other media types. If you look around your room, you've got screens, you've got audio, video, everything within that 3D environment. So we're at the beginning of 3D as a media type becoming as pervasive as these other medias that we're so used to using. And that we're at the very tiniest foothills of this amazing journey of what and how we're going to communicate in the future. And anyone who's involved in 3D at this point is at the beginning of one of the biggest changes in human communication and recording that we will ever see. So for me, this is the most exciting component. You add other technologies to it, like AI and machine learning to what we have here. It's going to be an incredible journey from here on in. And I don't see an end in sight. I just see up for this new media type.
So these great new ideas, and part of them is requiring people being adventurous enough or informed enough to want to, for example, dive into VR. Are you finding over time that as a rule, people are becoming more adventurous, more informed, more interested in trying some of these new technologies?
There's always going to be early adopters and then the early minority and the rest will follow. So, you know, I think we're going to move from the mobile phone to what I call the race to the face, where glasses are going to be the primary way that we interact with information. So AR glasses are on the agenda and the biggest companies on the planet are all vying for a position there. So, you know, I think for a while it'll just be a combination of your phone and glasses. Maybe we'll get to just glasses eventually, but it is an interesting place, and that's the race to the face is going to own your eyeballs. They're going to own your attention, and that's an incredible space to be. So, yeah, you know, that's what I see it as a future that people are going to work very hard to create because they see incredible value there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're obviously a man with great ideas. How do you go about finding people to join you on that journey, both having the vision and also having the skills to work alongside you?
Yeah, I didn't quite answer your question because you were asking how much is the appetite for getting involved in these technologies. And it's really affordable. You don't even need to own a virtual reality headset to develop VR content. And the cost of building a software-based business nowadays is next to zero. So people anywhere can get involved. And it's just terrific that people can start to build businesses with so little capital behind them and test things in the market to see if they're working or not, seeing if they can get traction. These are great times for anyone to find an opportunity. Obviously, you need some bandwidth to experiment with. And in some places, that's easier, actually. People that have a lower cost of living can now get involved and actually have a better chance in some cases than somebody who's in a high value area and their expenses are just over the top and they can't afford to have the extra months of runway to try and get a product out. So I think we've got incredible opportunities for a much broader audience of creators now. And the tool sets and the technology are easy to pick up and build something. You see hackathons where people build incredible stuff just in a weekend. So this amount of accessibility, I haven't seen it before in my lifetime. It's just getting better and better and better. And so it creates competition, but I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I think it's more people looking for the right opportunities, and out of that we'll get more lucky people, and out of those lucky people we'll see people giving back as well.
As you mentioned, there's just so much opportunity right now. So do you have any advice for those that are trying to evaluate one tool versus another tool, trying to determine where to invest their time and energy now as they begin to learn VR or about 3D spaces?
Yeah, I do have a very good piece of advice. It doesn't apply to all businesses in this field, but it's certainly something that we've followed that's been really successful for us. And that is not to, stake the farm on just VR. So virtual reality has a certain number of users. It's definitely gaining traction, but it may not be a big enough market to sustain your business idea. And very early on, we were targeting enterprises, and enterprises, some of them are still, I interviewed, I think, 200 of the Fortune 500 companies, and 20% of them were still using as their browser Internet Explorer 11, which is not even supported by Microsoft anymore. But, you know, we went the hard yards and made our platform work with it just so we could get these enterprise clients, because I wasn't willing to throw away 20% of market share. So having our platform work on mobile phones, on tablets, on Chromebooks and laptops and older notebook computers, really going the hard yards to optimize something that could run on all these devices, but also work in VR and AR, and also where the author doesn't need to know what device the person is going in on. Our platform automatically gives you the best experience for each device. So it looks native like an app on mobile, has heads-up displays in VR, and that's all done automatically by the platform. By doing that, we got so much more return on investment for people buying our platform, because they could deliver it to all their learners within an organization without worrying about what device they were running on. That gave us the ability to make revenue in a much better way. Whereas companies that I call VR only really had a very hard battle. They have to get people to buy the virtual reality headsets. They have to get it integrated with the enterprise systems. And that's that can sometimes be a complete blocker. And then you've got to consider things like, you know, do I move the headsets around between different people? Do I send them to different divisions? What if it's an international company? And what if people don't want to put on VR headsets? I remember back in the 90s, we had lines a mile long for people wanting to get into virtual reality and give it a go. And I remember a lady coming up to me, went to put this virtual reality headset on. Actually, it was a huge bulky thing, but she said, I can't put that on. I said, why not? And she said, what's going to mess up my hair? And it was a valid point, because it really would. It was a pretty bulky, thing that would, but, it's a valid concern. Some people get nausea in the headsets. Some people just, get fatigued in them as well. So you've got to have a realistic expectation that just because it's wonderful new technology doesn't mean everyone's going to adopt it. Yeah. So having a broader spectrum of where you can deliver value, and that's where I mentioned before, the user-centered experience is the real value, not whether it's VR or AR or 3D on a screen. It's about putting the user at the center of the experience, allowing them to make decisions that change the outcome. But that's what moves the needle 80%. And then the immersion adds another percentage on top of that. But if you're not focusing on the user-centered experience as the value and just VR or AR, you might be missing the point.
Thank you. We've been talking about that amongst our team. You're speaking right into that. Thanks. Ten years from now, what do you hope to be working on?
Well, work is a funny term for me because I kind of, my life is my work. So I hope to be living in 10 years from now. But I do have a side interest for the last decade or so. I've been studying and involved with the longevity industry, that is extending human lifespan through science. So I'm very interested in that. And I'm interested in human psychology and also technology like VR. And I think there's a great overlap in all these different elements. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm going to be surprised where I am in 10 years' time because of the surprises that are coming with technology. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm very much going to be involved in human health and increasing the health span of people, not just the lifespan, not the number of years, but how many years we have as really active, engaged, healthy people. So that's an area I'm very, very interested in and actively experimenting in as well.
Wow.
You're a man of many interests and many skills, obviously, and passions.
I'd say time, a lot of years behind me to get where I am and a bit of luck. So, persistence and luck, I think, are the two factors here.
Well, how can we keep an eye on what you're doing? Because I think we would all agree on our team and our listeners too, that we want to follow Danny and his interests because they're going to lead to some of the most innovative projects in technology. So how does one follow your work?
Well, probably the best way, the most active channel I'm on is LinkedIn, and everything kind of filters down from there to Twitter and elsewhere.
Okay.
So LinkedIn is definitely the channel, and following LearnBright and Moodup would probably be the most exciting things I'm working on right now. So I'd follow those. I think you'll find some incredible tools that may actually add value and utility to what you're doing. And for anyone that's in lockdown or remotely working, I think those tools might provide them with a new and fun way to interact and increase the enjoyment of the work that they're doing. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And we will have access for all of our listeners on our website. We'll provide the resources that Danny just mentioned and a link to his LinkedIn page and more. But Danny, thank you so much for giving us your time. You're a busy person. We didn't even invite you to a VR or 3D experience, and you still said yes to joining the podcast. So thanks for doing that.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Glad to have you with us.
Thank you.
Thanks to all of our listeners for joining us on this latest episode of Digital to Learn.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.